Welcome to Morgan Lewis Podcast Central. This is a podcast recording from Morgan Lewis's June 13th, 2017, 10th Anniversary Advanced Topics in Hedge Fund Practices Conference. Morgan Lewis partners Jed Wider and Timothy Levin chaired this 15-part in-depth discussion of U.S. and international advanced hedge fund topics focusing on manager and investor perspectives. Part 6, EMEA Funds Landscape. Ethan Johnson, Eamon Kallick, and William Young will discuss fund and regulatory developments in Europe and the Middle East. Now, on to the podcast.
You know, there are two things that are clear about doing business in the Middle East. Number one is there are issues that you hear about in the news and that may or may not affect your capital raising or your activities or the activities of the investors in the region. And the other one is that there is capital in the region that is looking to be invested abroad, and the amount of capital available for investment abroad tends to be also impacted by what's happening on the ground. With this in mind, it's still the case for most investors in the Middle East that they are comfortable investing through offshore vehicles, particularly Cayman Islands and increasingly the Channel Islands, as we continue to see more regulation and regulatory demands being imposed on those investors. They tend to favor those types of entities or pass-through vehicles for their investments, which is more the case in private funds, less the case in hedge funds, where we tend to see capital flowing directly into the funds or the separately managed accounts, depending what the case may be. There's one thing to keep in mind, that in some jurisdictions, like Saudi Arabia, for example, if you have a placement agent, chances are that that placement agent has got to have also an investment management license. It's just a quirk in the regulations there, which means that when they raise capital on your behalf, they need to set up a feeder fund. Technically, it is a feeder fund for purposes of their local regulations, but that's something that often raises some issues because of disclosure requirements and how involved does the fund manager, say in the US, need or want to be in controlling that disclosure document that that placement agent is circulating to its investors, because it's not likely to be exactly the disclosure document that you have here. So it has to be some sort of a wrapper, for lack of a better term. So some managers tend to try to avoid being too involved, but there has to be a minimal level of involvement. I'll skip the comparison because, you know, you'll have it in your material, and anyway, time is limited. The marketing of foreign funds to the GCC is an important consideration for most of our clients. Historically, we were all, you know, operating within what I call like a tolerated practices zone, with very limited guidance by way of enforcement, you know, procedures taken by regulators in those jurisdictions that would help us as lawyers give advice that's practical to our basically clients. What has happened lately is that the UAE in particular has come out with a user-friendly securities regulations that say for marketing foreign funds, if you go after sophisticated investors, you are exempt and you don't have to get the approval of the regulator before you carry out those activities. And there are three categories that they basically identified as being exempt, and those include sovereign wealth funds, they include investment companies and asset managers, which in a way ticks the box on most investors, but does not factor in or include high net worth individuals. But if you take into account that most high net worth individuals have their own investment vehicles anyway, there are ways probably to market to them using those vehicles. It's still not as clear in jurisdictions like Qatar and Bahrain and Kuwait, where there's still there's some quirks to their regulations. For example, in Kuwait, there's this loophole where you can't really courier documents over or send them by fax, assuming anyone uses fax still, but you can email it because the regulations don't cover email. So it's just, you know, these are the kind of issues we have to deal with, but ultimately we often advise our clients to keep it, to do one-on-ones with small number of investors, particularly and preferably ones that you've had a relationship with before or who have been referred to you by regulated, like by banks or asset managers. Saudi Arabia tends to be the strictest. Even if you're selling to one investor, they want you to use a placement agent who's regulated by the Capital Markets Authority. The only exception, if they meet you in Dubai, and most of them like to do that, travel to Dubai for those meetings, then you're outside the jurisdiction. But beyond that, that particular market is very strict. The other thing to keep in mind, when you go and raise money in the Middle East, there's a good chance that you're going to run into family offices who would say, can you structure the investment to be compliant with Sharia? This is a socially responsible investment route for most of them. That's a $2 trillion market. And if we follow a McKinsey study that I've seen a few years ago, 60-70% of investors in that part of the world would prefer to invest in a Sharia-compliant manner if the terms are as economically feasible as the conventional ones. In other words, ideologically, they don't really care much other than making the same amount of money. But if you offer that route, that would be preferred. So for some fund managers, the question always remains. So I'm adding an extra layer of governance to what I do, and I'm literally carving out sectors that are not considered ethical from that point of view. So at what point is it material enough for me to do that, to create a separate vehicle or a feeder fund versus the cost associated with doing so? So it has to be material enough or sizable enough to trigger any interest by the fund managers here, at least based on our experience. But it is an issue that we tend to see. And what it does, your fund structure won't change. What will change is that there's an extra layer of governance where you have experts or scholars who have to approve the investments. So for big fund managers, there's no interest in doing that unless there's a way to create a feeder or parallel vehicle that would allow, you know, those investors to get the same type of returns without really changing the outlook for the other investors who just don't have to deal with those types of issues. But for most of you who are dealing with socially responsible investors, this is something that we all have to deal with. It's coming up more and more as investors have their own investment criteria, be it the IFC, the International Finance Corporation, or some pension funds, religious institutions, or what have you. Now, one thing also to keep in mind is the flight to safety. Because of what's happening, historically, Middle Eastern investors have been very active in investing in the US, in Europe, in Asia. And that precedes Chinese or even Japanese or Russian investment, simply because oil money started flowing in the 50s or 60s. And you see that one of the first, I think, investment sovereign wealth funds was the Kuwait Investment Authority. And because of that, there is some level of sophistication by those institutions. But we are seeing more and more money flowing abroad. Just to mention like a quick figure, around $20 billion were invested in U.S. real estate, for example, in the 12 months up to the end of June 2016. Around $8 billion in Europe and the U.K. included, and $3 or $4 in Asia. So that is something we're seeing. And with it, there is a degree of structuring that takes place. With most fund managers we see here, other than those who have direct relationship with sovereign wealth funds and family offices, most of them opt to appoint a financial institution in the jurisdiction where they're raising money to be their sort of joint venture partner and for them to absorb the regulatory sort of heat or requirements in terms of setting up the entity, raising the money. And most of those entities tend to be offshore entities that then invest by way of one account in the foreign fund. Finally, the sovereign wealth funds, and that's a big thing. We're seeing a consolidation taking place. If you look at Abu Dhabi, there were a number of sovereign wealth funds that those are consolidating, other than ADIA, which remains a standalone. Saudi Arabia is creating sovereign wealth funds, public investment fund being one of the largest, and some of you may have heard about the announcement they made of the $40 billion fund that will be managed or co-managed with Blackstone into U.S. infrastructure that was unheard of before. And the ones that are more sort of the older, better established ones like ADIA, KIA, QIA, they seem to have taken the view that, you know, that they're revisiting their investment approach. We're seeing a flight to separately managed accounts. We're seeing more and more joint venture type arrangements as opposed to direct LP investment into funds. And we're spending more and more time negotiating those side letters that they insist on having. But if there's one thing for sure is that they are restudying their strategies. Their governments now have figured out that they need more money to be kept inside the country, and they're relying on those sovereign wealth funds and their expertise to bring in the right managers to help them do that, in addition to managing the funds that are flowing into the other markets.
Does this recent diplomatic standoff with Qatar and the other Gulf states sort of indicate a problem of thinking of the region as a whole and create hurdles at all?
If you're from the region or have lived in the region for a long time or you travel there, I mean, The region never fails to impress or depress, depending how you want to look at it. So this is factored into doing, you know, the usual business. I don't think it should, I mean, number one, just as a casual observer, I think that's something that will have to be resolved sooner rather than later. Secondly, in as far as outbound investments are concerned, I doubt that this will impact that flow. But in terms of regional capital flow, yes, that will, you know, that will impact the whole thing. But I think an institution like Qatar Investment Authority is going to continue to invest and as actively as before. And the same issues we're looking at in terms of the focus on separately managed accounts and investment platforms is something that I think we're going to continue to see pick up and take over basically direct limited partnership positions.
Thank you. That's wonderful. Very interesting. And it's a fascinating region. And you really do have to keep your eye on it every day. It just seems to
absolutely
chat. It's a kaleidoscope. Well, William, that's probably true also of Europe. Can you bring us up to speed on the latest and things are going on in England and et cetera?
With pleasure. Thank you, Ethan. There's the agenda for my slides. Let's go straight into them. Looking at hedge fund management, of course, from the European asset management perspective here, no surprises that Cayman stands out as the most popular domicile for hedge funds managed in the UK and Europe, and it's likely to continue to do so, closely followed by Luxembourg, Ireland, and Delaware. The typical structures we use in Europe do differ a little from in the USA. Here's a simple corporate structure suitable for European investors and US non-taxables. We've got a Cayman Limited company being the fund in the middle with an offshore manager classically and also in the Cayman who delegates to the principals behind the idea of the fund or the sponsors. We'll call that the UK investment manager regulated by the FCA. Slightly more complexity there, the master feeder structure to accommodate the needs of US taxable investors. We'll have a master fund there in the middle. And then we'll have a feeder fund going up to allow US taxable investors. That'll be typically a Cayman partnership or a Delaware partnership or LLC. And then for our European and US non-taxables, they're happy to invest through a Cayman limited company. We've had some post-Brexit, we had a fascinating survey of about 177 asset managers with global operations accounting for around $740 billion of AUM. And that was organized by the Alternative Investment Management Association in the UK with offices throughout the world and the Managed Funds Association here in the USA. And we've got some interesting tables to go through. The most popular location, just a word on nomenclature, AFIM here is an alternative investment fund manager. Call it a fund manager of a private fund, if you will. An AIF is an alternative investment fund. Call that a private fund. So the most popular location for AFIMs is the UK. AIFs, on the other hand, are predominantly based in the Cayman Islands, Luxembourg and Ireland, with Cayman being the most popular, as we've already noted. Use of UCITS. In Europe, UCITS are a genuine hedge fund type vehicle because they do allow for hedge fund techniques. And just less than half of the respondents of the survey used a UCITS fund vehicle for rolling out a Cayman type style hedge fund strategy. And there you can see in the darker color, plenty of interest in the UK, US, Europe, excluding the UK and Switzerland, and indeed the Asia Pacific regime. Looking at the majority of management companies of UCITS funds, those UCITS funds may well be based in Ireland or Luxembourg, but their management companies are nearly always based in the UK. Ireland and Luxembourg there being the most popular for the domicile of the UCITS. You'll have heard of the MiFID directive this morning. MiFID I was the first directive, and almost 70% of respondents operate a European MiFID investment firm. And those firms headquartered here in the US are amongst the most common proponents of incorporating an EU-based MiFID investment firm in their group. On the location of MiFID firms, we learned from the survey that the overwhelming majority of MiFID investment firms are again based in the UK, and the accounts and clients appear to be spread quite evenly across the available jurisdictions that we've listed there in the table. Let's now turn to investors and marketing locations. The survey found, interestingly, that most firms have investors in the UK, France, Luxembourg, Germany, and Sweden. and they also tend to market in the UK, Sweden, Germany, Netherlands, France, and Italy. Obviously, there are other countries in Europe, and some of those you'll see on the table in greater granularity. And then in terms of how to raise assets in Europe, the survey found that firms place the most importance on what many of you will know is called reverse solicitation, which is a very useful exemption from the AIFMD obligations and has proved popular. Closely followed, of course, by genuine private placement. And those techniques have proven more popular than the use of marketing passports under the AIFMD, MiFID and UCITS. And those marketing passports are predicated on the basis you have an EU establishment. Let's look a bit more closely at UCITS, liquid alternatives, as they are an important part of the European hedge fund management scene. Often you'll find a hedge fund manager with a Cayman fund and also with a UCITS fund. There may be some tracking error even on the same investment strategy with the Cayman fund performing slightly better. But the UCITS fund has many advantages. The vast majority of liquid alternative strategies are pursued via UCITS. There are about 1,000 hedge-like UCITS funds. And there are plenty of platforms to help you with your UCITS fund establishment if you don't wish to establish your own organization here in Europe. And those platforms house between 3 and 20 asset managers. I did note that very few platforms offer both an EU UCITS and a US 40 Act facility combined. And the principal non-domestic domiciles for UCITS funds, where you're looking to attract investors not just in that country, continue to be Ireland and Luxembourg. Ireland's popular in the Anglo-Saxon community, obviously very popular here. And Luxembourg tends to be used for continental investors, although that rule of thumb has broken down a little in recent years. There are other domiciles of relevance. For example, Malta is an EU member state and does have a fund structure and regulatory system and is regarded as something of an outlier choice, but nonetheless a choice. And the reasons why you might invest in a UCITS are its high reputation for transparency and oversight, continues to make them popular with private banks who distribute to their retail clients as well as institutional investors. In addition to Europe, UCITS are actually widely sold in Hong Kong, Singapore and Taiwan, and South America increasingly. So they're not just a vehicle for European investors, by no means at all, and indeed they can be sold in the US as well. Popular UCITS investment strategies in the hedge world are long short, equity market neutral, merger arbitrage and CTA funds. On Brexit, the UCITS marketing passport attaches to the UCITS fund as opposed to the manager, and the UK is not so much a significant domicile for UCITS funds themselves, so the Brexit impact is potentially less problematic as the non-UK UCITS may simply delegate day-to-day portfolio management to a UK manager or indeed a US manager.
So William, if I'm a US manager and I'm looking at the options, I understand the advantages of the UCITS, but what would I compare if I'm thinking maybe of an AIF alternative investment fund as opposed to?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Ethan. The domiciles of Ireland, Luxembourg, and indeed Malta do actually offer AIF products or private fund products. They don't simply offer UCITS funds. And those products are much more lightly regulated. So you're likely to choose an EU AIF in one of those countries over an EU UCITS if you're not going to be targeting retail investors, for example, and you're sufficiently attracted by the marketing passport that comes with the AIFMD, either to set up your own establishment in the EU, which would be expensive, or perhaps to look for support from a third-party AIFM platform that can help you comply with the regulatory need for establishment. Your institutional investor base is not insisting on investing in a UCITS. Some institutions will insist on that, but not all. And if you'll also find an EU AIF more appropriate than an EU UCITS, if perhaps a 40 Act-like exoskeleton of the UCITS is not appropriate for your fund management establishment. If you run an illiquid asset class, or if you want to invest in just one single asset, you'll also want an EU AIF. And at the end of the presentation, you'll find a rather useful comparative table that takes you through Irish, Luxembourg, and Malta vehicles. I wanted to touch on Brexit.
I thought Brexit wasn't happening now.
Ah, well, I think it's either Brexit or Britain. But I shall come to that in a second. Obviously, we had an election last week in the UK, which has been portrayed as something of a disaster for the incumbent Conservative Party led by Theresa May. To be fair, that Conservative Party now has 56 more seats than the next largest party, but there are many political parties in the UK system, and if all those other political parties gang up against the Conservatives, then the Conservatives no longer have a majority to pass their own legislation as they see fit, which is why you're reading about crisis and coalitions. There has been talk of a Britain. I think that is fanciful. To stop Brexit now, you'd probably need yet another UK election, which would need to be won by the political party campaigning to stop Brexit. And then that party would actually need to win the election itself. However, the result of the election will almost certainly be greater involvement across party divides and more consultation as Prime Minister May seeks to placate her own MPs and, of course, her own MPs that are no longer MPs as a result of the election. So I think Brexit can be softened or altered, and I think we're likely to see a long transitional period at the end of the negotiations whereby the UK, although it's left the EU, there'll be a transitional period whereby the status quo persists for perhaps 3 or 5 years. And that will, I think, prevent the cliff edge that is a potential problem with Brexit. You'll know about Europe wanting to intervene in the markets to shift euro clearing from London. That's not necessarily going to happen, but there is a lot of pressure from continental Europe for it to happen. It would need forceful intervention in the markets with a messy and disruptive outcome. And commentators have suggested that the US would not like to see that happen, as it has so many financial firms based in London, and indeed might even consider relocating Europe's dollar-denominated clearing market to North America. With that, Ethan, I'd like to hand back to you.
Perfect. Thank you very much, Eamon and William. That was a very interesting explanation of a very complicated situation. Thank you. And we're all available after the session for questions. We've now reached our lunch break. If everyone would go out and collect food from the buffet and then bring them back here, and then we will start promptly thereafter with our keynote address. Thank you.
To listen to other panels from the 2017 10th Anniversary Advanced Topics in Hedge Fund Practices Conference, visit our Hedge Fund University at morganlewis.com/hedgefunduniversity. If you have any questions or would like more information on the topics addressed in this podcast, please contact a Morgan Lewis attorney at morganlewis.com. This podcast is provided as a general informational service to clients and friends of Morgan Lewis & Bockius LLP. It should not be construed as and does not constitute legal advice on any specific matter, nor does this message create an attorney-client relationship. These materials may be considered attorney advertising in some states. Please note that any prior results discussed in the material do not guarantee similar outcomes. Read more about Morgan Lewis and its hedge funds practice at morganlewis.com/hedgefunduniversity.